Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This spring marked the 10th anniversary of legalized same-sex marriage in Massachusetts. But what if I were to tell you that one New England couple were, for all intents and purposes, wed much earlier, 200 years earlier, in fact, in a small town in Vermont?
That's the true story of Charity Bryant and Sylvia Drake, who met in 1807 in Weybridge, Vermont. They fell in love and lived together for 44 years in a relationship that had all the legal trappings of a marriage, except for an actual marriage license. They shared property, their business, and eventually their final resting places.
And they were also public pillars of their community. They volunteered and paid for the upkeep of their church. They taught Sunday school and employed many Weybridge residents in their tailoring business. And their remarkable story is told by Rachel Hope Cleaves, author of Charity and Sylvia, a same-sex marriage in early America. And Rachel Hope Cleaves joins us today from Victoria, British Columbia in Canada. Rachel, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's wonderful to have you. And I wonder if you might start with a little excerpt from your book. And it's an excerpt in which you describe the image that appears on the cover of the book. And these are two silhouettes of Charity and Sylvia facing each other.
It begins, two twists of hair perch atop their foreheads, and two wisps curl down the napes of their necks. They are mirror images, striking in their similarity. But the more you look, the more their distinctions emerge. Their sameness is misleading, a misapprehension that obscures their differences from each other and their difference as a pair from others at the time.
Right. And so this is describing these two silhouettes of Charity and Sylvia that I presume that they actually had made in the style of silhouettes that a regular married couple would have had made.
Exactly. It was a common practice in the early 19th century for traveling silhouette cutters to come to different towns. Of course, this was before photography, and painting was very expensive. And so Charity and Sylvia went to use the services of a traveling silhouette cutter, and their images are framed together in their interwoven hair, which is braided together and forms a little heart between their bosoms. It's a really beautiful image.
Right, and the fact that they had this these silhouettes made is just one piece of the many pieces of evidence that showed that in their 44 years together in Weybridge, Vermont, their relationship was an open secret of sorts. But how did these two women first meet?
Well, they met through Sylvia's older sister, who was married to a distant relation of Charity's. So Charity came to Weybridge, where Sylvia and her siblings lived, for an extended visit. Charity had had a difficult time during her 20s. She worked as a teacher and traveled around a lot of towns in Massachusetts, but had experienced a lot of sort of rumors and gossip about her character. And so finally she decided to accept an invitation from this cousin of hers and his wife, with whom she was friends, to come visit them in Weybridge. And when she did, she met her cousin's sister-in-law, Sylvia, and the two women fell in love.
Mm. And when you say that Charity had to move around New England a lot because of questions of her character, I mean, is that just a polite way of saying that there were questions about her affect and her sexuality?
It would appear. So personal reputations were incredibly significant in the early 19th century, and rumor could really devastate a person's life. And what's amazing is that we have lots of evidence that there were rumors that circulated about Charity's character in all of the different towns where she visited and worked during her 20s. But there's not much recorded about what specifically those rumors consisted of, which I found very interesting as a historian, because a lot of the time when other people in their friendship network, when rumors circulated around them, Charity would write down the content of those rumors. Somebody had gotten pregnant illegitimately, or somebody had been seen flirting with the wrong person, or someone was an alcoholic. So those things did enter into correspondence, but there's this real blanket silence about what are these rumors about Charity. And to me, that, as a historian of LGBT history, that was a real signal that maybe these are rumors about her sexuality.
Right.
Because historically, same-sex sexuality was treated as the mute sin or, you know, the crime that couldn't be named. There was always a sort of cloud of silence that indicated this.
Yeah, and I think this is exactly why, for people who don't know this story, the for all intents and purposes, the marriage of Charity and Sylvia is so remarkable, because even though these rumors persisted and followed Charity, you know, all over New England, after she meets Sylvia and they end up living together, you know, and in love for 44 years, certainly those same rumors one would expect would follow them to Weybridge, and yet it doesn't seem to have interfered with how they lived their lives there.
That was the core puzzle for me in doing this research and writing this book, was trying to understand how these women could form a relationship which was commonly regarded as a marriage or something like a marriage by their family, by friends, by community. How could they form that relationship and yet maintain the toleration of their community?
Well, do you have an answer? Do you have the beginnings of an answer to that? Because they, as we indicated in the introduction here, they legally shared property, which between would be remarkable even just between a man and a woman, let alone two mm-hmm. women. They had a mm-hmm. business. They hired people. They helped pay for the upkeep of their Congregationalist church. They were even buried together. I mean, put all these things put together, I mean, why not just call them married?
Yeah, well, and people in the town did. Right. I have a memoir written by one young boy written as an old man, recollecting his boyhood growing up in a nearby town. And he said, I commonly heard it around town as if Miss Bryant and Miss Drake were married to each other. So that was the language that was used to describe their relationship. I think the answer is that the community agreed to regard them as a married couple, but to kind of maintain a shared secret about what that implied about the women's sexuality. And of course, in early America, people understood marriage to be a sexual relationship. It was even in the marriage ceremony that's included in the Book of Common Prayer, where ministers are directed to say, that one of the purposes of marriage is to prevent fornication, right? To make sure that sexual passions are confined within a legitimate relationship. And so everybody understood that marriage was a sexual relationship, and they called Charity and Sylvia a married couple or like a married couple, but they just chose to close their eyes to what they knew was a possible illicit sexual aspect to that relationship. And I think the reason why family and friends ultimately agreed to keep this secret, this open secret of the women's sexual relationship, was that they served such an important purpose, right, such an important contribution to their town.
Well, on that note, though, I mean, you also write about how Sylvia, at least, struggled with what she felt were profound contradictions between her sexuality and her relationship with Charity and her profound faith, though. So not all was smooth sailing even within their relationship.
Not all was smooth sailing within the relationship or within their relations to family. Sylvia did receive a lot of pushback from her family on account of her marriage to Charity. Most of Charity's struggles happened before she met Sylvia, but for Sylvia, who was only 22 when she first met Charity, she suffered for 10, 15, 20 years from a lot of resistance from most of her brothers and from her mother, which was very painful to her. And in addition, she really struggled with a deep sense of sinfulness that seems to have been connected to her feelings about her erotic relationship with Charity. In some ways, that was a very typical struggle for the sort of Christian that Sylvia was. She was a very orthodox Trinitarian Congregationalist. So this is the sect that came out of New England Puritanism, and people in her faith often struggled with feelings of not living up to their own religious ideals.
Regardless of their sexuality.
Regardless,
exactly.
Right. So,
well, I'm sorry to interrupt you there, but there is a sort of another big point that you make in the book, which I found very compelling. And that is the fact that not only was there something interesting going on in Weybridge regarding the tolerance that, or at least tolerance, if not begrudging tolerance, that many of the residents showed Charity and Sylvia, but the fact that this is happening in the early 19th century, so just a couple decades after the Revolutionary War, right? Because you write that the War for Independence had not only broken the political bonds of empire, creating a new nation, it had torn the social fabric of the colonial world, birthing a new American culture. So perhaps the openness of this relationship could not have happened even 10 years earlier.
I think that's right. And I think it's not just about the openness of the relationship, but it's about the ways in which the revolution unleashed women's ambitions to live lives that were more independent than their mothers and then the previous generations of women. So both Charity and Sylvia were the youngest daughters of very large families, and both of them, their brothers and sisters, became the parents of very large families. Sylvia ended up with 64 nieces and nephews, and she had one sister-in-law who had 18 children. And this was, which was a large number, but families, women having families of 9 or 10 children was not unusual. And there was very little independence for rural, with almost everybody, right? For rural, non-elite women with these enormous families. And I think that the revolution really unleashed the desire among a lot of women for more independence, for more personal independence, more economic independence. And you see that in, of course, Abigail Adams's famous plea to her husband John Adams during right after the Declaration of Independence, when the Declaration of Independence was being written, saying, you know, remember the ladies, like, take into account as we begin forming a new systems of law that let's challenge the legal system of coverture that's governing and constraining women's independence.
Yeah. Do you mind if I just jump in here? Because we're running out of time here very rapidly. We only got about a minute to go. But there's one last question I wanted to turn to you. And that is, in your book, you also write that basically, that lots of people are surprised that in the early 19th century, in 1807, and for the following 44 years, two women were able to live together in what was essentially a marriage and do so openly. And you write that our shock at this tale indicates a failure of imagination. Now, given the amount of repression and violence that has been, you know, fallen upon the LGBT community in the United States over many centuries, maybe one could understand the failure of imagination here. But why do you say that we shouldn't be so surprised that these relationships were out in the open even 200 years ago?
Well, I think that we do have a bias as moderns, and we tend to be self-congratulatory about our moment and the way in which our moment is an advance on moments in the past. And certainly LGBT history is marked by terrible suffering and oppression and tragedies. But I think we also need to add to that story the evidence of people's resistance and survival and ingenuity and the ways in which communities could and did tolerate people who stood outside of the rules, who did transgress. And Charity and Sylvia's story brings that to light.
Well, Rachel Hope Cleaves is a professor of history at the University of Victoria in British Columbia and author of the new book, Charity and Sylvia, A Same-Sex Marriage in Early America. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And stay with us coming up. We have a professional baseball team in Boston, but they're not playing like pros. We'll take stock mid-season. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.